hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. That, whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it, and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles, and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to effect their safety and happiness. Prudence, indeed, will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes, and accordingly, all experience hath shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer, while evils are sufferable, than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations, pursuing invariably the same object, evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty, to throw off such government, and to provide new guards for their future security.
People's Tribune Radio is on the air. I'm your host, Mike Thornton. Motherhood, apple pie, hot dogs, fireworks, and baseball is what many people think about on the 4th of July. But July 4th is the anniversary of a revolution, the American Revolution. On this special two-part edition of PTR, we look at that American Revolution and what it means for us today here in the United States with writer and historian Chris Mahan. People's Tribune Radio is produced by the League of Revolutionaries for a New America, who also published the newspaper People's Tribune, Tribuno del Pueblo. Stay tuned for contact and ordering information at the end of the program. Chris Mahan is a people's historian who writes and lectures on American history. On this special edition of PTR, we look at the American Revolution and how that revolution has shaped our country's history and what it means for the struggles of working and poor people in the United States today.
What happened on July 4th, 1776 is that a body, the Second Continental Congress, which consisted of representatives of each of the 13 original colonies, voted to adopt a document called the Declaration of Independence. And that's why we celebrate July 4th. That body, the Second Continental Congress, had actually decided to become independent of Britain 2 days earlier, but it formally adopted the Declaration of Independence, which is the statement indicating why, on July 4th. I think the significance of July 4th for today is that this is the anniversary of a revolution. I think we forget that sometimes, that this country was born in revolution, that revolution is a perfectly legitimate thing. In fact, the Declaration of Independence says in it that people have the right to make revolution if their government is showing what it says is evincing a design that is showing a clear pattern of becoming an absolute despotism, that if that's happening, people have the right to make revolution. In fact, the Declaration of Independence says that they have a duty under those circumstances to make revolution. So I think that that's something that's really important for us to remember today. I mean, people are going to be having barbecues on July 4th. They're going to be having fun. They're going to be going to the park. And all that's fine, and fireworks are fine. But I think that we should remember that this is about the anniversary of a revolution. It's about people saying that we are not going to accept tyranny. We are not going to accept a tiny handful of people, in their case, the British king and the British parliament, deciding things for them. That this is the country that wouldn't accept a tax on tea or a tax on stamps, and instead revolted. And if we go back and we look at what happened in the revolution, I mean, people went into the streets, they destroyed the property of the British governor generals and the British officials. They tore down statues of King George III and melted them down and used the lead for bullets for the Continental Army. I mean, this was a very, very dramatic event in the history of the world, marked by great rebelliousness. And I think the thing that we ought to ask ourselves today is that this is the anniversary of a revolution. This is the anniversary of the adopting of a document that condemns the British government for protecting by a mock trial those law enforcement officials who've shot at young men in the streets of Boston. And I think the question that we have to ask ourselves on this anniversary is, if this country, if people in this country at one point would not allow a tax on tea, are we going to allow arsenic to be put in our drinking water? Are we going to allow young men today to be shot dead by law enforcement officials and not rebel against it? Or is the rebellion against that, those things, perfectly legitimate? The Declaration of Independence says that people have a right to revolution. It says that all men are created equal. It says that people have a right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And I think that we should stand on that and say today that we have a right to people not starving to death. We have a right to people not being homeless. We have a right to a decent and full life. And if that means that we have to have another revolution to achieve those rights, so be it.
Despite the rhetoric about freedom, equality, and the right to revolt, after the war was won against the British, things seemed to begin to take somewhat of a different turn.
After the American Revolution, you had a situation in which forces, social forces, that while they were opposed to British rule in North America, were also very privileged forces, gained control of the revolution. And so as soon as the revolution's over, and as soon as there was a constitution that was established, then they began to downplay the whole idea of the right of revolution and the legitimacy of it and the role of common people in the revolution, and they began to put forward an interpretation of the Revolutionary War that was at variance from the truth and that emphasized stability rather than revolution. And this is then continued. And in fact, each time that we have a social upheaval in this country, you see this process where the American Revolution wasn't the only revolution. I mean, you look at the Civil War in the United States, that was in many ways a revolution. It's sometimes referred to as the Second American Revolution, and justly so. And even the Civil Rights Movement was a revolution against segregation. Now, after each one of those revolutions, you have the forces that gained from them. During the struggle against the old way of doing things, they're emphasizing the right of revolution and they're hearkening back to the Declaration of Independence. But then once they gain what they wanted to gain, then at that point we have to have stability, we have to have unity, and so forth. And there's this tendency to downplay the legitimacy of revolution.
But what about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness? And what does that mean for people today?
This is a term, this is a phrase that's in the Declaration of Independence over which there's been some debate in the history of this country. And there are political forces that will tell you that particularly the part of it that says the pursuit of happiness, that simply means the right to acquire property. And they argue that in some earlier drafts of the predecessors of the Declaration of Independence, that the phrase was actually life, liberty, and property. But I think that that's a very, very narrow definition and not a definition that serves us well today. I mean, really, it's the moral equivalent of the argument that was put forward by certain people, such as Senator Stephen Douglas of Illinois, before the Civil War, who said that the phrase "all men are created equal" simply meant European men, men of European descent. That I think we have to look at the history of this country, and the history has been that people have taken the words of the Declaration of Independence and they have fought consistently to interpret those words in the broadest possible way, in the most expansive way. That people decided that the phrase "all men are created equal," that includes women, that at Seneca Falls in New York State in 1848 there was the Women's Rights Convention where they issued the statement, the Women's Declaration of Sentiments, and said that we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men and women are created equal, that people fought, the abolitionists fought consistently for the idea that the term, the phrase, "all men are created equal," was a condemnation of slavery, irrespective of whether every signer of the Declaration of Independence meant it to be or not, that it could only be interpreted as a statement against slavery. And I think for us today, we've got to ask ourselves, what does life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness mean? Does it just mean the right to, you know, drag yourself to some dead-end job where you work all week and barely have enough money to pay the bills and then go back to work on Monday morning? Or does it mean a decent society, a society that benefits everyone, that allows for the full cultural and spiritual development of everyone? And so the question is, how can we really have life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness when we have capitalism, when we have a situation in the world where there are 3 billionaires, and the three richest people on this planet have an amount of wealth equal to the 49 poorest countries in the world. And that situation, that split between rich and poor, is increasing every day, to the point now where the gap between rich and poor in the United States is greater in the United States than it is in Britain, the country that the United States became independent from. So I think that the pursuit of happiness means really ultimately a just society, a cooperative society, a society where there's distribution according to need, and a society without capitalism.
The American Revolution, as some might have us believe, is not simply an event that is now relegated to the pages of history, but is an ongoing, a continuing revolutionary process.
I think what we're talking about is a continuation of the best of the American Revolution. I think what we're talking about is that impulse within the initial American Revolution that came from below, that came from the runaway slaves, that came from the mechanics of Philadelphia, that came from the young people in Boston who surrounded the British soldiers on March 5th, 1770, after they had, one of them had struck a young boy with a musket, and they surrounded him and confronted him for that act of brutality. That impulse is what we're continuing. That was one side of the American Revolution of the 1770s. And I think what you see is that impulse continues through the abolitionist movement of the 1830s, 40s, and 50s, and into the Civil War and beyond, into the fight of the poor ever since. So there is definitely a continuation. Now, obviously, we're not talking about continuing the slave owning of George Washington or something like that, but I don't think that's the real essence of the American Revolution. I think that the essence of the American Revolution is that it's a fight against the control of society by a tiny handful of people. I mean, at that point it was the British Crown and the British Parliament and this impulse from below. And I think that continues today, that people don't want to have a tiny handful of millionaires and billionaires running the world today.
While in many respects the current situation can be seen as a continuation of the American Revolution, radical changes in the economy and in society make this a very different era.
We're seeing something qualitatively new. At the time of the American Revolution, one of the great pamphleteers of the revolution and of all revolutions, Thomas Paine, in his great pamphlet, Common Sense, said, "We hold in our hands the power to make the world over again." He was talking about what the American Revolution could do, the impact it could have on the world in terms of setting an example against monarchy in favor of national independence. But I think that that phrase, "we hold in our hands the power to make the world over again," is a very telling phrase for today, because what we're seeing today really is that the world is being made over again, both by people and by forces beyond the will of people, economic forces. We're seeing a situation where we have had the introduction, and this process is still ongoing, of completely new, qualitatively new productive forces, the robot in production, the development of computerization, the whole scientific and technological revolution is creating a situation where it is now literally possible to have production without human labor. And so we have this completely new world where we have the internet, we have a fully world economy, and within that we have really for the first time a proletariat in the real sense, a class that has no connection to the means of production, that's being forced out of production, and on one hand, at one pole of society you have that, and at the other pole of society increasingly you have this just tiny handful of people, a class of millionaires and billionaires. And so just as in the 1770s, the question was, you know, are we going to have a few kings and princes running the world? And the moral example of the best in the American Revolution, personified by people like Thomas Paine and those young people in the streets of Boston, is no, let's not have a tiny handful of people run the society. Today we have a moral question before society, and that is, are we going to let this tiny handful of millionaires and billionaires just rule the world in their interest? And so what we need today, and I think we're starting to see this, is new Thomas Paine's emerge, new forces saying, let's introduce new ideas, let's talk about taking the world and putting it in the hands of the majority. I mean, another thing that Thomas Paine said at that time was, the birthday of a new world is at hand. And I think that's the question for us today. Are we going to guarantee the birth of a real new world where there's a society is organized according to need, you know, where people's spiritual and cultural needs are met, and not where everything is the market and you have a capitalist society in the hands of a few.
Thomas Paine was a preeminent revolutionary propagandist of his day, inspiring the people with a vision of what could happen in a country that wasn't ruled by a king. An oft-used quote well states the position, "Without a vision, the people shall perish." What about a vision for this ongoing American Revolution and the revolutionaries of this time?
If we look at what's possible today, that we have a situation where it is now possible to build houses virtually overnight. I mean, they have the technology to do this. We have the technology to produce food almost overnight. And where the productivity of agriculture, I mean, the development of science has been to the point now where a very, very small section of the population is needed in the farming regions of countries like, for instance, the United States. I mean, we're seeing a real shift away from the rural areas toward the suburbs and urban areas because agriculture is so productive. Yet at the same time, we have a situation where millions upon millions of people go hungry in this country and certainly around the world, where 1 billion people live on less than a dollar a day on this planet, a planet with 6 billion people on it, and another 1 billion people live on less than a dollar and a half a day. So you have this incredible contradiction where if we could take these productive forces and put them in the hands of the majority of people and use them to meet the needs of the majority of the people and in capitalism, there could be a situation in which not only could you have a situation where people's needs in the sense of their minimum calorie needs are met, but their needs in the much broader sense, in the spiritual and cultural and educational sense, and in the sense of preventing the destruction of our environment, those needs are met, and where we could reorganize society in the interests of the majority. And I think that needs to be our goal. That vision is a continuation of the best in the American Revolutionary tradition. I mean, if you look at the history of the American Revolution, the thing that's interesting is that it started out being around very, very particular things. The people in the 13 colonies, most of them, thought of themselves as being British. They were British settlers. They came to the Atlantic coast of North America and named it New England, and they established New London, Connecticut, and they named Boston after a city in Britain, which is north of London, and they established Salem and Cambridge and all these places that are named after places in Britain, and they saw themselves as being British. And at the beginning of the revolution, they were simply fighting to adjust their relationship with the British Crown and the British Parliament, and they wanted a little more local representation. And the whole question, you know, the whole slogan of no taxation without representation was a demand that their local legislatures be allowed to decide the taxes rather than the British Parliament. But it wasn't a demand for independence, and it wasn't saying there's something morally wrong with monarchism in the world. But as the struggle developed, as it dragged on for years, ultimately a section of the revolutionary forces began to see that there was something fundamentally wrong with monarchism in the world. There's something fundamentally wrong with this an island controlling a continent and one country oppressing another country. And so certain forces within the revolution began to articulate this position. And this is, in many ways, the very special contribution of the pamphlet Common Sense by Thomas Paine. That he writes this pamphlet in January of 1776, and what he says is that one honest man is worth more than all the kings who ever lived. That we need to just get rid of monarchism in the world. America needs to become an independent country, and that will then set an example for the rest of the world and will inspire revolutions around the world. And, you know, essentially he's saying, let's go the whole nine yards. You know, let's stop piddling around with trying to reform the relationship, and let's end this relationship with Britain. And so he's for qualitative change. And I think that we should be as bold as he was. We should be as bold as the abolitionists who said, you know, let's not try and restrict slavery to this state or that state, or, you know, say it can't expand beyond the Mason-Dixon line or something like that. Slavery's wrong. Let's get rid of slavery. Let's abolish it completely. I mean, there is, in the political tradition of the United States, this radical impulse that says sometimes it takes people a while to see that something's a problem. But once they see something's a problem, there's an impulse in the political history of the United States for people to say, you know, if we're going to deal with it, if we're going to get rid of it, let's cut it out completely. Let's just eliminate it completely and totally. And so you don't have a situation where the United States is part of the British Commonwealth, for instance, the way countries like Canada are. When we broke with monarchy, we broke with it completely. When we got rid of slavery, we got rid of it completely. And I think the question before us now is, if capitalism is hurting us, let's get rid of it completely.
If we look in terms of a past American Revolution and perhaps the beginning of a present-day American Revolution, are we in one now or in the beginning stages of one?
I think in the economic sense, it has begun. That a revolution starts with changes that people can't see on the surface. It starts with changes in the economy, in the the objective factors of society. If you look at the American Revolution of the 1770s, it really began when the population began to expand considerably, when the commerce had developed to the point where you had a capitalist class in North America that was going to have to break the bonds that had been imposed on it by the capitalists of Britain. I mean, there were all sorts of economic restrictions that were placed upon the New England shippers and the southern slave owners too, and other economic forces in American society. And so there was a situation where for a long period of time they were sort of chafing at British control, and it took a while for the economic changes and the objective changes to be reflected in a political struggle. I think today we have a situation where we certainly have an economic revolution that's taking place right now in America. I mean, when you have a situation where steel can be produced with one-tenth of the people that used to be employed in the steel industry in the Chicago area, where you have robots in the auto plants of Detroit, where you have workerless production beginning in the United States, that's an economic revolution. Now, all of the political and social results of that economic revolution haven't yet been seen. We're still in the middle of those. But I think that it's virtually inevitable that there will be political and social results of that economic revolution. And at that point, the question is, when a debate unfolds in society and it's starting to unfold, what position are people going to take? Are we going to just try and take society back to a world that was a reflection of an old economic reality that's now gone? Or are we going to readjust society around the new economic reality? I mean, it's kind of like, are you going to, you know, if your kid outgrows their shoes, are you going to cut off their toes to fit them in the shoes, or are you going to buy them some new shoes to reflect the fact that their feet are now bigger? I think that we need to change the political and social forms of society to reflect the new economic reality.
This has been part one of our special PTR presentation looking at the American Revolution and the 4th of July with People's historian, writer, and lecturer Chris Mahon. We hope you'll join us for part two. That's it for this edition of People's Tribune Radio. Thanks to the overwhelming response to PTR in our first year, the program is now available twice monthly and on the internet at www.ptradio.org. People's Tribune Radio is produced by the League of Revolutionaries for a New America. The League advocates for a cooperative society where the same technologies of robotics and computerization that are being used to displace millions of workers worldwide is used for the benefit of the planet as a whole. If you'd like more information about the League, our Speakers Bureau, or our other print and audio publications, you can contact us at 1-800-691-6888. That number once again, 1-800-691-6888. My name's Mike Thornton. On behalf of the League of Revolutionaries for a New America, we invite you to join us next time for another edition of People's Tribune Radio.